I'm listening to the show every morning, and you can say it's grand. It's not grand if you're not on it, though.
OTB's Mount Rushmore.
Some talent in Cork, isn't there? Wow. A few of the GAA boys weren't happy, but it was my sporting hero. I was contesting, I think, against Jimmy Barry Murphy. So once you're in that company, everything is good.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
It's very, very special. Believe me, I think it becomes more special when you're on the coach, because it's something, unfortunately, inside me that's ultra competitive, and I need to be there.
Catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM on the OTB Podcast Network. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, celebrating 10 years of iconic sporting moments at the Aviva Stadium.
I'm not worried about it. I can stand over this. Cora Staunton, Lee McHale, Kevin Kilbane, and Kieran MacDonald.
OTB AM's Mount Rushmore.
All right, we're moving our Mount Rushmore over to the Garden County. It's moving on to Wicklow. We've our judging panel of Paul Howard and Tom Malone going through the ringer a little bit later on with their four selections. But to set the tone for the day, and it's been controversial, plenty of controversial days so far, comedian, broadcaster, physicist, Wicklow County Minor.
Yes.
Well, says he's infamous Brit Licker for one day only, Darrow Breen. The only thing that matters is the Bray stamp on your passport. You're welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here, lads. It's a pleasure to be here. And Bray is very much key to what we're doing here. I think that finally Bray can dump the rest of the county, because this is a solely Bray-only thing.
Is there a tension between... Because these things can't exist.
Look, I'm just saying that the under-16 football championship in 1988 was tense, and that there are scars between ourselves and Rathnew that will never heal. And it was also split two ways, because you only ever met Arkle right at the very end. So there's a lot of simmering stuff that goes on in this county that people don't recognise. Once in a GAA match, when we were I think we were chased out of Lara or somewhere, and somebody shouted, "Asher, you're only a garrison town," which was an insult. 80 years in the making. Honestly, we're in the van home in underage GA all piled into the back of a van kind of thing, going, where's the garrison? And we think it was the thing that later became the FCA. But anyway, you're only a garrison town. I'm just saying, I put the ball in the net from a position that they said the ball was already over the line. It was impossible. Look, scars. They're old feuds that have to be fought. So no, Bray only. Who else do you have?
Did you say football? Did you say football?
I played football, and hurling wasn't there. Wasn't a huge hurling pool, but I played mainly football up and down. There is a light this time of the year, which I don't think is spoken of enough. There's a light that indicates it is football time, which just comes across, you know, the mountains in Kilkool or whatever. And it's just that early evening light when you're an underage player. It's just quite beautiful. It's a lovely thing. Mm-hmm. And then somebody picks a fight with somebody from Kilkool, and everyone has to run up the field and join in. And I remember many times where I would sit on the grass with the opposing fullback, and we chat about the leaving cert while the other 28 players were all in some mill in the middle of a field on a beautiful summer's evening. So yeah, mainly football got me up and down the county.
You did make, you played county?
Got me up and down, travelled up and down the county with it. I was a county trialist, but you know, it's all politics. And they already had the number 14 marked out, and I scored a crack. Anyway, look, you really are scratching old wounds here, but I got on for 30 minutes in a hurling championship, actually probably the year earlier, if you know what I mean, when I was in 50 rather than 60. Okay. And it was John Henderson, Kilkenny legend John Henderson, who was looking after the team at the time, and we played a game against Meath, and I was put on for the first half, and I was then yanked at half time.
There was a lot of leaving cert chat, is that what you were saying?
Well, you know what I mean? Like, I had stuff, you know, mocks coming up, who knows? In fact, it was a year before the leaving cert. I was freeze yeah. Bird, but yeah, but I had other things. My head was elsewhere. I was a young man, I was probably in love or something. So I admire Connell's focus in that situation. But it was, you think these things sit in your Sydney, and you very rarely get a chance to sort it out. But 30 years later, I met John Henderson in a pub in Bray, because he lives in Bray now, and he was introduced to me again. And I said, "Oh no, I know John Henderson." And then I told him how he had started and ended my minor county career, and it remains a kind of a joke between myself and John Henderson, in as much as he like goes, "Oh, that time," and he's not totally sure how angry I am about it, but the but he's going to go, "Oh, ho, 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 ho," and I'm there. So that was my intercounty. All it means is that I can claim to have played minor at an intercounty level, and no one can ever take that away from me.
Can I just ask, when a town like Rathnew is referring to you as a garrison town, what sort of rich culture are they sitting on that allows them to point fingers at a garrison town?
Listen, who knows where 1798 started? Who knows where those pikes were sharpened? So Rathnew may have a brave revolutionary history. That Bray, as a Vichy town, was not a part of. So I wouldn't question him on that, like, whatever. But you know, if it was question was asked of them again, I'm sure Rathnew would be there for Ireland.
We better get stuck into the purpose of the business here. The Wicklow Mount Rushmore.
I'm just setting the context of, I will be incredibly dismissive of anyone who's not from Bray. because Bray was a cauldron. It was the crucible of sport in Wicklow.
Yeah, your credentials and your biases are both set and welcome, Darragh.
So, good.
We're setting those out from the outside. Katie is obviously the one that's an absolute non-negotiable. It's sort of
that's the card. That's the massive card you play in this situation. There's very little. It's like it's the ace in the hole you just slam on the table, like, whatever. I don't think that works as a card playing metaphor. But it is a thing. If anything, let's hold that back and run through all the people who would themselves have to go, "Ah, yeah, Katie, yeah."
The floor is yours.
Darren Randolph, seeing him pop up in, you know, at the Emirates and going, "He's from Bray." That was a very nice thing about Darren. I'm very fond of Darren as well. Darren makes the list, and then I'll include Laura Whitmore as well. What the hell? So essentially your Rushmore is Darren Randolph, Katie Taylor, Laura Whitmore, and me. That's it. Who else do you have in mind?
Nobody's arguing with this. I mean, I think this is probably the end of the conversation. How do we word this sort of correctly? Katie's obviously the serious exception to it. Darren Randolph, as you mentioned, I wasn't even aware that he was from Wicklow. There's a little bit of a fall off after that, is what I would suggest.
It's not the most populated county. It had other things on its mind. It's never been a force at an intercounty level. Even the one time that Bray won in All-Ireland, they did it for Dublin in 1902. And then I don't think we've come close to winning a Leinster even. There have been the other thing. Kevin O'Brien of Bolton Glass, he would be probably regarded as our best ever Gaelic football player, made an all-star late 80s, around the legendary Bolton Glass team that went to the... Did they win the All-Ireland Club Championships, or did they just get to the final of the All-Ireland Club Championships? There was at that point a great generation there, and Kevin O'Brien was our number 11 in the all-star team in one of those years, which was a surprise to all of us. Well done, Kevin. Then you're into the random celebrating of what we get in the way that Ireland generally, this is the joy about Ireland, is, you know, occasionally on an Olympic level, we randomly get somebody who pops up through some genetic fluke, and then we get a medal out of it, like that's great. So Wicklow plays that role within the country as well, of being a small population that occasionally a spike occurs, right? You have a list. I know you have a list. Tell me the list is.
There's a list. So actually, the one of the things that I wanted to come to you on, and funny you should mention the Garrison Town aspect of it, the rugby potentials that have been up for discussion. Jamie Heaslip in Kildare, you would have thought was an absolute shoe-in, didn't make the cut. Right. Shane Morgan in Meath, again, you would have thought should have been up there, didn't make the cut. And it's, I think, possibly representative of a tension between Ireland and the game of rugby specifically. But I mean, Wicklow has been to the fore with some big players who've moved on to coaching. Obviously, Leo Cullen in the mix, Reggie Corrigan's in the mix, and Shane Byrne, who, like, Leinster, Ireland, and Lions as well. So, like, some big names there. I don't know if you've a leaning towards one of those over the other.
I don't. Leo, possibly. Look, it's not my game. To a huge extent, sorry, I've always had a weird blind spot about rugby.
But you're not alone, is the point, right?
Yeah,
is that bit of a tension between Ireland and rugby?
I don't know if it's ridiculous to be holding on to this, but there's rugby schools versus other schools and all the kind of stuff. Like, if you're in that corridor, as I was, you know, that It was a different game from a different class or different group of people entirely, who was played within a certain number of schools in the Dart, and I wasn't on one of those schools in the Dart. I was on a different school in the Dart. I was in the only all-Irish GAA playing school in South Dublin, and I remember going back to our old school and I said, it was like that cartoon at the start of Asterix, you know, where there's a picture of a corner of France where it's Roman encampment, Roman encampment, Roman encampment, and then the Gaul village in the middle of them all. The school Clochon was this strange outlier, GAA outlier in the middle of that area. So that, I think, has coloured my view slightly. I've met loads of those lads, and they're really nice guys, and they're lovely, and I thrill for our success. But equally, I can't claim to be any scientist about it or any have any knowledge on it. I think there is an end. Like, am I wrong to say this? It's, and I don't mean to do down the game in any way. People get very defensive about it, like whatever. That its success is still built on a relatively small population, or in comparison to if the football team suddenly, if the soccer team suddenly did really, really well, I think it would, the rugby team would, so you'd see a more accurate representation. But because it's doing so well and we're all really happy to enjoy the success, I think it's still based on, if it came to a vote like this, that's, I think you'd still find the core supporters for other sports.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's been too easy for the selection panels from those counties to dismiss the rugby players, because, and for most counties, because it doesn't carry the same weight as football. It's just football so pervasive, and rugby is not. There are some other contenders. One of them that really jumps out for me was not a story that I was aware of at all. There's a guy called Joshua Pym. I don't know if that's a name that rings any bells for you or not. This is a guy from, it's very much back in the day, but he's a Wimbledon champion. He won the, this is all Wikipedia stuff now, and Paul and Tom are going to paint some actual detail on it.
Yep.
On. But he won the English and Irish doubles with his playing partner, Frank Stoker.
Frank Stoker?
Brother of.
Oh, brother of Bram.
Yeah.
Wow. That really was a small pool, wasn't it? I mean, and how far back are we going? Are we back when,
this is the
when
1890s.
It was a... Yeah, this is a smaller, where real tennis is probably still the big game in town. Like the
he was an amateur, I think. I think he was an amateur. There was a story of him. He got to the Wimbledon final in 1891, got knocked out in the challenge round in 1892. Now was playing with, this leaves Michael Jordan's sort of food poisoning in the halfpenny place here.
Yeah,
he was playing typhoid that year, so you know.
it's not a performance enhancing situation, typhoid. That wins in any of those, you know, when they all meet, you know, in an afterlife, like, and he goes, yeah. Oh, right. Oh, did you have a bad stomach bug? Spurs.
Great leveler.
Yeah. Was it a bad lasagna you had that day? Spurs, was it? I had typhoid. So that's astonishing. And he came back from typhoid, or did he?
He came back from typhoid. And I think, if my Wikipedia recollections are correct, one Wimbledon then the following year.
Jesus. I mean, there's kind of a Bert Trautman element to that, like, isn't there? That's a thing that would kill a lesser man. And from where in Wicklow, by the way? Do we know?
He was from Bray, I believe, as well.
Oh, look, see, you know, all roads. All roads lead back to the seaside capital.
He went on to live in Kingstown, I think, Dunleary, at some point shortly after that. But that sort of information we're just...
That's not part of this. This is part... Look, we've all, you know... Bray has a long tradition of hiding typhoid. And long may it continue. And various other, you know, kind of infectious diseases that we've not, you know... We, as a country, we tended not to... Typhoid Mary is a very good example of an Irish person abroad who refused to believe she had typhoid, even though she gave it to 15 other people and killed them in New York. So we have a glorious tradition of ignoring typhoid. Oh. Yeah, did you know that? Oh, yeah, that's where you get... Yeah, she was asymptomatic. They had to lock her up eventually on Ellis Island because she kept... She went to, worked in the house. Four people died in the house. Then they called, maybe, you know, and they fired all the staff. She went to work somewhere else. People died in that house. They said to her, "You can't work anywhere else. You're clearly the reason for this." Like, because she was like a cleaner worker in the house. So they're basically, and so she went under an assumed name, worked in another house. Four more people died in that house. I don't know the numbers are, but threes and fours and fives anyway. And eventually she lived out her life in Ellis Island, or in a sanatorium, I think on Ellis Island, refusing to believe that she had anything. She couldn't get the concept of asymptomatic carrying of the disease. And, you know, she'd be the one of the ones going, this lockdown, she'd be with Gemma O'Doherty now. Typhoid Mary, Gemma O'Doherty would be in the High Court right now fighting for this. Like, yeah. So she was very much the original John Waters in this situation. So, yeah, Typhoid, she won for Mayo, who worked as a cleaner in New York and whatever, whenever that was, yeah.
She obviously hadn't got the moniker before she's...
No, she didn't arrive. She didn't, in interviews, she didn't go, I'm Mary, but most of my friends call me Typhoid Mary. Don't ask why. But I'm available to work. Like, yeah, yeah. Just email me at Typhoid Mary at Ellis Island Sanatorium. I'm available for hours. Is this going off the point slightly? Anyway, sorry.
That's what we're here for.
Okay, Grant. Well, I accept that Joshua Pym can now knock either me or Laura Whitmore off the Mount Rushmore, just leaving the other two on. And maybe one space for a rugby player. Maybe, and we just get the faces and do kind of a mash thing where we make one player, one face that represents them all. And that would be... Reggie Corrigan was in bars in... It's always weird, like, when there's people you knew, you'd heard of in school. And Corrigan, we'd heard of in school. In fact, Corrigan, sorry, played for Emmett. I played GA with Corrigan a couple of times.
Right.
Yeah, because he's from Bray. So Corrigan's on the mountain. The Bray Mountain is taken. Yeah, Corrigan played, I've met him, and we played GA together, myself and Corrigan. So in the day that people would get dragged onto teams, and play, and we'd have the Prez lads would play for a while until they had to go and they play their rugby. There was a huge thing about who's available at different times of the year, you know, and should we be loyal to the players who only played Gaelic football? And that presumably happens in every club where there's loads of sports.
He must have been a memorable player then.
Well, do you know, it didn't happen that often. I think he was a couple of years older, So so it was like I may have been at the base of a squad of the under-21s when he was playing or something like that, as far as I remember. Yeah, but I know he wasn't part of the year that went through. I think he was a couple of years older than my year of rugby playing dilettante, who occasionally picked up the round ball during the summer to keep themselves fit.
Never had typhoid, though. Like, this is quite something that is elevating Joshua Pym to a whole new level here in terms of...
It is. Okay, for the typhoid, he overtakes Darren Randolph, who as yet has not contracted any kind of, like, well, who knows? Jesus Christ, let's not say that. Let's not say anything just in case, you know. But anyway, so yeah, okay, Grant, I'll put him above that. Who else? Who else have we got?
That's
a cyclist, wasn't there? Cyclist. Legendary cyclist. Was he from Bray? Oh my God, what's his name?
This is sort of the information you would think we would have at hand. Not Shea Elliott.
It was Shea Elliott from Bray?
I'm just Wikipedia here as we chat. And he he cycled with the Bray Wheelers.
Wheelers, yeah. So Shea Elliott was our first, our frontier-making cyclist, immortalized in the GPO. It is Shea Elliott's body that is used as a model of Cuchulainn in the big statue in the GPO. That's, you know, draped over a rock with a bird pecking at his eyes. That's Shea Elliott. Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. There was a guy. There was a French sculptor who moved to Bray during the war. Possibly interesting war thing about him, but we'll let that lie for now. He would cycle around in a beret, and I would note this. My father, that's the French sculptor, and he did the statue, as far as I know, and it's Shea Elliott's body. If this is not true, this is great, because I've really fleshed the story out. But as far as I know, like, because he needed a warrior, if you can imagine Bray in the 1950s, who you would sculpt to be like a model. Well, you'll pick the guy who cycles internationally. Yeah, so Shea Elliott. Although that figure, modern day cyclists have that weird kind of elongated limbs, kind of a strange kind of they're so it would look weird now if you did it with Froome. It would be very weird.
There'd be nothing in it anyway. It'd be taken away with the wind.
Exactly, yeah. And so you go, Jesus, Cuchulainn wasn't a big lad. He was long.
Was Cuchulainn taking something?
Now there's all so many questions. Yeah, but the different generation. Obviously, we're not saying that they're a Froome, but also you would have gone Cuchulainn, excellent set of levers on him. I mean, really had long limbed Cuchulainn. strode across the fields to fight for Maeve's ball. But it was Faisal Rashele. Rashele is immortalised in the GPO. So yeah, it's him as well.
He's Crumlin, apparently. The Wikipedia stuff. Crumlin, apparently.
Don't care.
Sometime in Bray Wheelers. But definitely rode for Bray Wheelers.
100%. Yeah, look, Bray is a gateway to mountainous cycling. So, you know, it's a perfect way to launch yourself into the hills.
Two things to wrap up on, and one of them is that where would the Wicklow Freudian slip there, Mount Rushmore, actually go? Where would we be sculpting this thing?
Brayhead, obviously in Brayhead. It is both a mountain that faces the population, so you know it could reinvigorate the tourism industry there. It would stare down onto the town, and also it would stare away from the rest of Wicklow. So that wraps the whole thing up perfectly to us. It's just Bray people carved onto our mountain, looking at our town and towards Dublin, but shunning. In fact, if you want to sculpt their backsides on the other side facing Greystones, that'd be fine with me as well. Look, Katie.
Yeah.
How are you going to get over Katie? What are you going to do? What are you going to throw at me? Shane and the other soccer lads, we've had a couple of good ones. But Katie.
We were chatting last week. We did County Down last Friday, and we were saying, you know, they've got Rory McIlroy and they've got George Best, and we were saying both great contenders for the All-Ireland Mount Rushmore. Does Katie Taylor make the All-Ireland Mount Rushmore?
I would say she would, absolutely, yeah, because it was one of the more convincing gold medal wins, and that now she's followed up with it. We're trying to count how many belts does she have at the moment. I was in the XL. To see that now a hospital, COVID hospital, but it's that very room. But I was in there. There's a photograph I used to show people that I took at the time of a woman with a beehive turned away with her hands in her ears. And I would guess people to guess who it was. And no one ever got it. It's Princess Anne, who was about four seats away from me because we black seats in the BBC. Princess Anne was attending it because it was, I think, the first women's boxing final anyway.
Yes.
And the noise, because of the 10,000 seats, 8,000 were Irish, easily. 8,000, 9,000 were Irish, like whatever. On a randomly assigned computer draw, we had got 8,000 of the seats for the final of the women's boxing. And the noise was insane. And Princess Anne was like this, cowering from the noise. And I took a picture of her, and then she turned around and saw me and did this face. That was my interaction with Princess Anne.
What was your interpretation of?
I did a bit of a thing back at her, like whatever. There was no place we could do chit chat, but we both. I know. She got the noise. I know. That was my interaction with her, and then. Okay, and also because we had no idea how she was doing as well. It's a confusing sport, I think, with this. So there was a lot of fretting in the room at the time. There was a point because the BBC were covering us, and normally it was supposed to be just us going, oh my God, myself and Ed Byrne, oh, this is terrible. We'd have a little microphone. The microphones couldn't pick anything up. So they had to give us those 1950s microphones that had a metal lip on them. Hold up like that. Right? And they gave us those. You can see why they use those in stadiums. They gave us those, but it looked like we were commentating them. We were supposed to be just making, oh my God, I hope she's doing okay. It was just supposed to be, you know, verite, just kind of like capturing our things as we said them. But it looked, we're verite with this ridiculous microphone to our lips, like whatever. And then I stood up and roared, lifted my hands above anything when she got it. Didn't think anything else of it. Went to the Irish Olympic Centre, you know, the hospitality centre was that evening to watch it, and said, met her mum and her sister and said hi to them. And then they showed the report, which was mute in the background, except for the bit where I rose up and my shirt came up with me and my gut was, and it's the worst television image I've ever had. It was just, oh Jesus, that's not good. And it's led to no lifestyle changes at all, of course, but it was still, oh yeah, yeah. I've never met her, but I've met various members of the family. But yeah, absolutely. I think for she totally was. Absolutely, entirely. I mean, who's going to dislodge her on that?
Yeah. The tension was unbelievable. That I was there having the tension of that exact thing, because we all went over on the basis that, well, sure, this is going to be a cakewalk and she's going to get done, and that we want to be there to see that. But the tension at that moment when the fight ended and what seemed like 24 hours between it and the decision being announced was just incredible.
Because, as far as I remember, she won the first round, lost the second round, and then won the third, as far as I remember. And so it was not clear. And it was a very good fight, like the so it wasn't clear cut, because Nicola, what's her name again?
Adams.
Nicol Adams had been on before and had been imperious. I mean, one of the great performances of that Olympics. Nicol Adams had just been fantastic, like whatever. So the room was all buoyed along anyway. And then there was a young American girl, I think, who won the other ones because we all adopted her for the third for some reason. The Irish all swung behind somebody because we were just so up about the whole thing. But the closest of the three finals was Katie's, because there was a comeback, a rallying comeback by the other boxer in the middle round, and then we'd no idea what was happening. So yeah, it was interminable. That it was a tough one, but listen, it was glorious. And then the anthem and all, oh, it was lovely. Lovely. I cried on screen, but I didn't see myself crying on screen because I wasn't looking at it because I'd seen my belly appear a second earlier.
Don't watch anymore.
No.
Before we let you away, Edgar, we do want to ask you, we had Lenny Abrahamson on the show during the week.
Oh yeah.
He's the person responsible, obviously, people be aware of Normal People, and you leading the brigade of witches to the door of this poor goalkeeper, who it turns out is, like, you know, David Seaman, Pat Jennings,
Darren Randolph.
He's very much the Darren Randolph. And is a, because look, we saw the scene, which is actually a very good representation of a GAA match, like whatever. I mean, it was, you know, it puts a million other versions of soccer to shame, that. Except for that tiny moment where he was through, put the ball in the net, and the keeper just seemed to flap a bit. I did this independently and then found out loads of other people had done this as well, going, that's a bit weird. It was all normal, and then it seemed like, and it was Malachy Clerk, and then of the Irish Times, had noticed, going, I think it has a smell of a lad being told to not make too much of an effort there. And then your man and Lenny came on and said, yeah, that's absolutely what we have to do, because he made a miracle save and we had a word in his ear, like. And then got him released the footage, because it became such a thing, released the footage of the save, which is a brilliant save.
Yeah,
and then it turns out Adam O'Connor, plays the same Peregrines, is on the, I think, the Dublin Minor Hurling panel as a goalkeeper. Is 16, another on the Dublin Minor Hurling panel, and I've had a conversation with them, Oscar Eilge, over Twitter about this, like, because they also did some thing where they're knocking the ball against the wall for Pieta House, like whatever. So we're having a chat about that and complimenting on him on this. And then while I'm joking about this, a mother from St. Peregrine's GA comes on to me on Twitter and says, he's only 16, so you can wind your neck in. I said, listen, it's okay, we've had a chat. Adam seems really cool. And then also I had the minor, a friend of mine from school, Gareth O'Rean, is one of the selectors trainers in the Dublin minor team. He said, oh Jesus, listen, you'll have his mum Lorraine on as well. So be very careful what you say. But by all accounts, when they release the footage, very good goalkeeper. And it is quite telling that he threw it in a way we all knew he was throwing it. He left that flag out there for everybody to see. Look, I could stop this, but I've been told not to stop this, so I'm just going to do this. Oh, well done, you scored. Well done. Because I put a note on the thing going, that was the person, if Lenny had been brave enough, he would have ditched Connell and Marianne at that point and followed the story of the goalkeeper who let in the goal in the last, because he didn't make an effort. That would have been a far more interesting drama and less filthy as well. Yes.
Nobody in the crowd would have wanted to get got
no, no one go near him. Don't go near him. Like, yeah.
I do admire you tweeting him in Irish on Twitter. It's like when you're abroad and you're speaking to Irish when you're in Irish when you're in Spain, so that no one of the locals actually recognize what you're saying. Is that what this is on Twitter? It's like none of my British followers would be able to recognize a thing I'm saying to this goalkeeper.
Honestly, it was more kind of a mental fact because I saw he responded in English, but he on a separate thing had tweeted something on Sky. And then I had this thing of going, oh, listen, this is probably Claude Shone. He's probably one of our generation. I don't think he is, actually. I never around to ask him. So I just habitually sent him a thing in Irish. And then away we went for a few tweets about it all. I was congratulating. They made whatever number of grand for Pieta House. So well done the lads of all the Dublin hurling panels. Banged 10,000 shitters against a wall to make money for Pieta House. So so we had a bit of a chat about that and stuff, and I was wishing him well. But no, it was just he'd respond to Skelga, so what the hell, we did it. And then for some reason, I think somebody who's a comedian called Ivo Graham, who's a Swindon City obsessive and so on, got involved. And I said, oh, I had a chat with him, forgetting that the entire conversation was in Irish. And Ivo Graham from Swindon was not going to enjoy any of it. So I directed him to this conversation. Oh, you should look at that. You should try Google Translate and maybe you'll find out what we said.
Darry, you've been absolutely brilliant with your time. You've done exactly what we asked you to do. You've set up the, I was going to say Bray conversation, the Wicklow conversation.
See what I've done there? I've made it about Bray. That's what Bray does.
We're coming back at some point to talk about that Ronaldo statue over your shoulder there, so we'll do that another time.
I'm more of a messy man as well, unfortunately.
You think that's
Ronaldo, yeah. No,
it's something else.
Delight.
Good. Thanks a million, Darren. It's been a pleasure. Brilliant with your time. Thanks a lot.
OTB AM's Mount Rushmore.
OTB AM.
With Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, celebrating 10 years of iconic sporting moments at the Aviva Stadium. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.